Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Emergency Medicine Journal Club podcast. It's a medical education podcast where medical students teach each other about emergency medicine. My name is Armand. I'm a fourth year going into emergency medicine, and I'm joined by my essential co-hosts, Pranav, Nate, Abby, Adam, Chris, Danny, Frankie, not this time, Taylor, and Kyle.
Hey, everyone. My name is Pranav Kaul. I am a fourth year going into emergency medicine.
Hey, my name's Nate. I am a fourth year applying into emergency medicine.
Hi, everyone. My name's Abby, and I'm also fourth year, and I'm also mapping into emergency medicine.
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam Monday. I am a third year medical student, and I'm going to apply into emergency medicine if they let me.
Hey, I'm Chris. I'm a second year, eventually one day, going into EM.
Hey, everyone. I'm Danny. I'm a fourth year, and I'm going into EM.
Hey, I'm Taylor. I'm a fourth year, and I apply to EM, too.
Hey, my name's Kyle. I'm a fourth year going into emergency medicine.
Yay! Guys, happy holidays. It's the holiday special. It's the season. Tis the season. It's currently snowing outside. Of course, the holiday season I'm talking about is Valentine's. So Valentine's Day, guys, of course, is the feast day that honors one or two Christian martyrs named Saint Valentine, which, after being established by Pope, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, this was originally a courtly love sort of holiday, but apparently this was, you know, during medieval Europe where it was like courtly love, where knights would go and do some various things, and then they would come back and be like, "Look, my lady, look what I did for you." And this was all actually influenced by lovebirds, which I thought meant like people in love. It's not. It's actually birds who, during the spring season around like February, would have ornate and intricate behaviors all related to getting laid. That's what lovebirds are. And so that was what influenced medieval Europeans to get it on February 14th.
So they watched birds and then they wanted to get it
That's
on?
That's right, yeah. They watched birds and were like, huh, they're doing a lot of stuff for
let's
sometimes very little in return. Yeah, let's go. I'm going to risk my life now and go fight this dragon and then come back and then you'll love me. That's the Valentine way.
Should we temporarily rename this podcast to our tribute to Sex Sent Me to the ER?
Yes. Anyway, we have announcements, guys. Moving on to those. We still have a new website. I don't know how long I can call it new, but catch us at emjccast.com. And Chris wins for the funniest person here. We were all picking topics for this, and then Chris has a, I don't know if I should just say this later, but your comment was absolutely hilarious, and we need to talk about it. The format, guys, for this episode is going to be like our Halloween episode, which if you haven't listened to, definitely go give that a listen. Instead of being case-based, today we're all going to share one or two cool things we found out about some emergency medicine topic that is vaguely related to the magic of the Valentine's season. And in between each person, Kyle is going to give us a fun fact about Valentine's Day. I don't know how he's going to interpret that, though. So if you're listening with a child or anybody who has, you know, age restriction.
It's family friendly. It's just chocolate facts.
We have some goals on the podcast there to learn one new thing and for that one thing to be about emergency medicine and then also to have some fun. Yeah.
Sounds like a deal.
Yeah. Every day.
Good. It's good.
All right. Let's get this going. I'm going to start off. Guys, do you know the story of Cupid? Do you know who Cupid is?
Yes.
I'm sure he flies around.
See, all right, I can go into history, but I'm not going to. Cupid is a Roman god. I'm just going to go into it. Is a god of erotic love, the son of Venus and Mars in the Roman pantheon. Not romantic love, but like the hot, steamy kind. And he's generally portrayed as a chubby little boy with a bow and arrow. And the idea is that when Cupid hits someone's heart with an arrow, then that person becomes filled with immediate desire. And so you might be thinking in Valentine's season, how can I fill myself with immediate desire immediately like Cupid does? And so enter this wonderful journal article from Benedetto et al. In 2019 in the Journal of Thoracic Disease. It just picture this, guys. It's a beautiful evening in February and you lay some rose petals on the ground and they lead to your twin bed because you're single and you're 48 years old. And instead of hanging out with anybody, you decide to have like a little Cupid mannequin in the corner, and then you put your crossbow in the hands of the Cupid mannequin and then load it up with a crossbow dart and think to yourself, this is going to be great. This is a great idea. And then, oops, you accidentally shoot yourself in the chest with a 16-inch crossbow dart. And you may be thinking like, oh, that's crazy. That never happened. But it did. It did happen. Okay. This is crazy. This is a case report, actually. This guy shot himself accidentally in the chest with a crossbow dart that was 16 inches long. A crossbow dart is kind of just, we'll just say it's an arrow, right? Cupid's arrow. This guy actually did not lose consciousness at all, and he was hemodynamically stable. He calls for help and goes to the emergency room right away, where upon inspection, he has a pulsatile metallic tail end of a dart sticking out of his left parasternal chest with no exit wound. All right. So this guy's clinically and hemodynamically totally stable. And so, you know, if you're studying for surgery boards, right, he's hemodynamically stable. And so he goes to CT before they want to do anything. And on CT, I'll link the images in our show notes. But basically, this is a kind of a good time to think about where the heart sits in the chest, right? So you have your, you know, because the way we think about hearts is, you know, if you're super uninitiated, you think it looks like the, like two hands coming together and yeah, like the like cartoonish heart. Then you, you know, get a little bit more initiated in the world of biology and you realize that the heart actually doesn't look like that. And it has four chambers. It's got the left ventricle, the right ventricle, and the atria, the two atria, like a house with rooms. Except that it doesn't actually look like a house with rooms and it doesn't look like there's, it's like right on and everything's nicely, neatly divided. The heart is rotated, right? So the right ventricle is actually at the front and then the left ventricle is kind of at the bottom on the diaphragm. And so this guy got shot and the dart went into his right ventricle and through his right ventricle and then exited out of his left ventricle on the diaphragmatic side. Both of these ventricles are obviously, they're like muscular and the left ventricle is a little bit more so, but all of that was penetrated by this guy's dart. And then this is crazy. I'm going to show you guys the image, but then this dart, the head of the dart barely misses this guy's descending aorta and just skirts a little bit to the left and then embeds itself right next to this guy's vertebrae. This, all of this happens and the guy's totally conscious and calls for help, which is crazy to me. So I know what you're thinking, right? You're thinking like, all right, how do they get this thing out? So first, I'm going to ask you guys a question. What do you think the first step is for like, all right, you're in the OR and you're like, all right, we got to get this thing out of here. What do you think the first step is? And it's not get out of the OR because you're not a surgeon. It's an ER podcast. So stop that, Kyle.
Bypass.
What do you mean?
Put him on cardiac bypass.
Get the blood out of the heart.
You guys are way smarter than I was. I didn't
prep the sterile field.
Sterile field, that's right. Yeah.
Check for scene safety.
Check for scene safety. You guys didn't do that. There's an arrow in the heart. There could probably be a crossbow, like Cupid mannequin somewhere in the room. You don't know. Yeah, it's the cardiac bypass. So what you do is you cannulate the femoral vessels, right? And you do what's called ECMO, which is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. We will talk about that in a different episode. I'm not going to go into that here, but the basics is you are able to pump the blood and also oxygenate the blood outside of the body. And so you can take all the blood outside of the heart. And so when this guy had, you know, eventually they have to take the arrow out, which is going to leave the heart with two holes. And you don't want this guy's blood just squirting out of the heart into his pericardium. He's going to get like a tension cardiac tamponade. I don't know. Something like that.
Or just bleed out.
Yeah, I'll just, well, yeah. Anyway, so they're going to finagle the dart out at some point. So they got to drain the heart of all the fluid in there, the blood. So this guy doesn't start shooting it out of those holes. He surprisingly actually on, you know, after they start that, they go in, there's no blood in the pericardium, which is incredible. And then, so they, what they do is they play this, like the most, probably the most stressful game ever of human Jenga, yeah, where they slowly take out the arrow as the heart is beating and then sew up and close the orifices that it leaves. And then they wean him off of cardiac bypass. And he's only under for like 10 minutes. 10 minutes of him on ECMO. It's for them to like remove the arrow and then sew up everything. And then what they do is they do an intraoperative trans-esophageal echocardiogram to see if everything's working correctly and if all the anatomy is correct. And it's fine. It's totally fine. No damage to the valves. No damage to the papillary muscles. No damage to anything else. Just the muscle, which is just still crazy to me, right? And then the next thing they do is they close and they, you know, reinforce it with glue and everything. And then he's post-op day 1, 2, 3. He goes to post-op day 12 with no complications. And then they, before they discharge him, decide to do a trans thoracic echo and find nothing wrong. They do blood tests and chest x-ray, still nothing wrong. All of that within normal limits. And so the takeaways from this paper are what? Wow. And also, most penetrating cardiac trauma is universally fatal, with more than 50% of patients dying in the short term and 30% of patients dying upon arrival to the ED. So you need to make these decisions fast because these people are kind of on their way out when you know, they get shot in the chest. Another cool fact is small missiles like bullets and shrapnel and pellets, these guys, if they're in the myocardium or in the pericardium or in the pericardial space, they're actually pretty well tolerated. You can actually leave those in there, you know, barring any crazy clinical course or hemodynamic instability, people can actually tolerate those pretty well. it's the intracavitary ones, the ones that are inside the ventricles and the atria. Those are the ones that are going to be causing the most problems. So this guy actually had a small portion of the arrow in his right ventricle cavity. So he would have had a problem if they had left it in there, which obviously they're not going to do because this thing was sticking out of his chest. It's like something out of Grey's Anatomy or something. The right ventricle is actually the safest place to get hit with something like that because it's got a fairly muscular wall and it's got a pretty low pressure. And so if you're going to get shot in the chest, I hope you get shot in the right ventricle. I hope you don't get shot, period. But if you do, you know, this got me thinking, if you watch the movie Iron Man, he probably would have been fine without the arc reactor in his chest because, you know, they were talking about how all the shrapnel and everything was like on its way to his heart, not in his heart. So fun fact there. Anyway, the two main takeaways from this paper, just don't with weapons. Just don't. Don't keep your ammunition somewhere else unloaded from your weapon. Keep your weapon somewhere else or just don't have weapons. If you're going to have a weapon and you're going to load it, don't point it at anybody, especially yourself. That whole Cupid mannequin thing, by the way, it was fake. I made that up. I don't think that guy actually did that, although it doesn't go into what actually happened. And number two, most importantly, if you have an arrow in your chest, please get help. Don't remove the arrow. Don't remove the arrow. Don't. And on follow-up with this guy, the patient was noted not to be following up in cardio clinic. He was noted to have been starting like marathon training. And he said his favorite band was Bon Jovi. His favorite songs included You Give Love a Bad Name and Shot Through the Heart. When asked why he wasn't following up in cardio clinic, he replied, my heart's just not in it.
Wow.
I got to show you these. I'm going to see if I can share my screen. Maybe I can share my screen. I got to show you this guy's. Oh, here it is.
I'm just wondering if this guy got shot with an arrow instead of a crossbow bolt, if that would have just been like instant death because the arrows have like that kind of like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Triangle was talking shape about, start yeah. Where crossbow bolts are.
There it is.
Are like round.
How do you know that, Nate?
Because I did archery when I was a kid.
Ooh. Yeah. So they were talking about
he's
how like.
There,
the,
too.
That, yeah. The arrowhead is actually on like. Crossbow darts is in line with the shaft of the arrow and not like a triangle. It doesn't jut out. It would have made it way harder. So as you can see, like, isn't that crazy? It's going into the right ventricle. Oh my gosh.
Like he's not paralyzed.
It's like in the myocardium there, but like, look at this. It goes like into the heart and then out of the heart and then just.
Oh, I like that 3D images.
Yeah. Choice. I thought that was crazy.
Jeez.
How long is it again? It was like 12 inches or something?
16.
Yeah.
16
inches. Yeah. Look how bloodless that field is as really well. Do you see any blood on that man's chest?
Yeah, no. Right.
Anyway. Did he just not bleed? Is he actually a vampire? I
maybe. It wasn't a silver stake, so you know, maybe just, it was.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
This was like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer level kink that just went wrong and
like
we don't know.
You could be
know.
Totally right, yeah.
We
maybe
don't know.
It said he
I
shot
would say
himself.
I fell but... on it. I would say I fell on it.
I love to see how he managed to shoot
had a Buffy the Vampire. And honestly, if you had a Buffy the Vampire like kink that you ended up shooting yourself in the chest with a crossbow, would you tell your ER doc that?
I probably would.
I don't think so.
I would. Like, you never...
You won't believe this.
let me just get this off my chest.
You mean out of your chest?
Really? Yeah, right.
Don't get it off your chest.
They were like checking his teeth, and was like, "Yeah, he's got like really long canines." I know that has nothing to do with the rest of the physical exam, and also there's an arrow in his chest, but he's hemodynamically stable, and he's got really long canines. All right, that's all I got, guys. Kyle, tell me your fact about Valentine's Day.
It's about chocolate, not Valentine's Day. Okay.
Sure, man.
The world's biggest chocolate bar weighed 12,770 pounds.
Almost as much as I weigh.
Was it dark chocolate?
Where was that?
UK.
Yeah, was it?
The UK.
Where was it, sir? Oh, I thought you were... Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Why does that make sense?
Like, Switzerland would
well,
make
I mean,
sense.
I,
like,
yeah, I guess you're right, yeah. Well, okay, so... All right, last
speaking
year before
of Switzerland,
all this stuff happened, I went to London.
Swiss people eat on average 19.8 pounds of chocolate each year. They consume more chocolate
maybe
than
you're
anyone
Swiss
else in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say. Except for me.
On average, they consume more than people from any other country.
Beautiful.
If you've ever had Swiss chocolate, like you know why they eat so much.
I think the chocolate bars are the same. They just have a bunch of holes in them, right?
It took me way too long. I mean, that's what I was going to say. When I went to London, like 2 years ago, before COVID, right? I bought one bar of the dairy milk from Cadbury, and that changed my life. And so I bought 20 more and brought them with me, and I've been steadily eating them. Anyway, sorry, Pranav, you have to go.
Oh, no, this is really enjoyable stuff. My sister actually married a Swiss man partially for the chocolate, so I completely understand where we're coming from here. All right, well, so I, was browsing the internet, learning about different love-related injuries, which, let me tell you, there are many, and I'm sure we're going to hear some today. But one that really sparked my interest was something that's very common, especially among young people, specifically the hickey. So for those of you unfamiliar, for whatever reason, the hickey is a romantic gesture that often is expressed. Abby, I'm trying my best to justify things here.
Sorry, continue.
if there's not a hickey, I'm not sure it's romance.
Yeah, no, it's colloquially known as a love bite. The hickey really manifests itself in high school with young love and individuals who want to demonstrate their love for their partner in a more permanent way, or at least for a mark of some sort. In any case, there was a story out of New Zealand in 2010 that really caught my eye. And it was a case report that was published in the New Zealand Journal of Medicine, essentially looking at a 44-year-old woman who presented to the emergency department with upper extremity paralysis. And she was worked up for any number of conditions. And of note, she had a large bruise on her left neck. And as they examined her and got more history, they realized that she had received what we now know as a hickey. And they decided, what if we, scanned her and just did an ultrasound of her neck? And what if there's some clot or thrombosis that could have caused and, dislodged and embolized her brain and is causing her unilateral paralysis? So they did that. And lo and behold, their ultrasound revealed this.
Oh, yikes.
Oh, my God.
So as you can see in this wonderful color ultrasound, that is her common carotid branching into her external and internal carotids. And in her internal carotid, she has a massive arterial thrombosis, likely secondary to what they now consider her hickey. And I was reading into it, and I think one of the most important takeaways I had from this case was going back to basics and going back to MS1, where we learned about thromboemboli and where they come from. And do you know what I came across? It was the Virchow triad, which we all have forgotten, but near and dear to all of our hearts.
Wait, hold on. Who's taking step? What's the triad?
Oh, yeah. Let's go, Chris.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's stasis, endothelial trauma of some sort, and hypercoagulability. No,
that's like a tooth.
Wow, dude.
Nice. You already passed.
You don't even need to study. Yeah. Just take it now. Just
take it tomorrow. I'll call Prometric right now.
Yeah.
I like how the image is called Love Bites Ultrasound. JPEG.
I will say the journal article itself is called Love Bites, an unusual cause of blunt internal carotid artery injury. So
good title.
Yeah, they went for the colloquial on this one. But all of this to say, yeah, you're absolutely right. Virchow's triad was incredibly important in this story, because we tried to understand why she developed this clot in the first place, right? And when we think about hickeys, obviously trauma to the vessels is a huge component of it. But the other question that was raised is, did she have any underlying hypercoagulable state that contributed? And then how long did the hickey actually take place for? And to what extent did stasis occur in the vessel? So those are questions we don't have answers to, unfortunately. But food for thought for anyone out there, especially the high schoolers that listen to this podcast. Think long and hard and carefully about hickeys, because the consequences of them can suck.
Crunch.
The fact that this paper was not called A Hickey Situation is an affront to mankind.
All right, guys, welcome to the Dad Joke Podcast.
Oh, sorry. I just want to close the loop on this story. She survived, and her paralysis resolved. She received warfarin to anticoagulate, and is now doing much, much better. So, yeah, there was a nice happy ending to it, and amazing stuff.
Can you imagine being that person in the hospital and then having to explain to your parents?
I fell on this vacuum, and it just like.
Again.
All right. Chocolate fact. Since we're talking about chocolate in Europe, the Brussels airport is the biggest chocolate seller in the world. And they sell 800 tons of Belgian chocolate per year.
I have contributed to that.
Whoa.
Yeah. Ooh. I got my Toblerone there.
You buy Swiss chocolate in Brussels? A place filled with Belgian chocolate? You didn't contribute to the 800 tons of Belgian chocolate?
I was young and naive, and I thought the Swiss needed a hand, so.
I'm ashamed for you.
Yeah. Pranav, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I'm really culturally sensitive, guys, I swear. Oh, I get culture.
That was really cool. And also, that freaks me out now. I'm going to be looking at the necks of everybody on Halloween and Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. You know in PDX when they teach us to inspect the neck? Is this why? I'm inspecting your neck. Good. No hickeys.
For a hickey thrombosis. Yo, inspect before you palpate. You never know what clot you're going to throw.
Producer Bella here. That's the end of part one of our Valentine's Day special. Stay tuned for part two, and have a happy Valentine's Day.